You're listening to Around Comics.
Oh, you are listening to Around Comics 434 with special guest star Dr. Zach Krusey in the house. I'm Brian Salazar. With me, as always, is Christopher Niesman. It is Thursday night, so you are listening to us, watching us on Around Comics. I don't know what's going on.
We're waxing the joint up. We brought in a doctor.
You got a PhD, a doctor.
Wow. Wow.
Is there a doctor in the house?
He can't figure out his camera or where to sit, so he
doesn't know how to use the fucking camera.
Yeah, but that's fine.
As Sal said before we hit the record button, we are just keeping the Illinois to Wisconsin ratio balanced here because we have our newest inclusion to the Scani Army, formerly from the great state of Georgia, now transplanted behind
Georgia.
The cheddar. Yeah, he was in Georgia for like a year.
Mm-hmm. He was in Georgia, Indiana, Michigan. Yeah. Are you just going to make your way all the entire country, all 50?
It's just going north, man.
Hey, bud. This is it. Yeah,
no, I was late to the party in the pre-gaming because I was at my curling club's opening party.
Oh. I still have curling party to check off of my list of things to get done here.
Anytime, brother.
No, I know.
Do I need to adjust?
Chris, you're very short. You're very in the little brother of this.
I know. Of this, I feel inadequate.
Little brother. The dog with
little brother Chris. Leg.
Hi.
We have lots of questions already from people.
Oh
the comment
section is abound. It's because Tom's not here.
No, that's got to be it.
Yeah. Well, you know, what are you going to ask Tom? It's just going to be a sort of snarky.
Funny.
Tom sarcastic. Really?
What are you guys drinking? I picked up a chocolate churro.
Ooh.
From Pipeworks.
Nice.
It's
horrible.
It's odd. It tastes like a beer with chocolate and cinnamon.
Oh. Somebody spilled their churro in a beer. Somebody dipped their churro in your beer.
Honestly, it tastes like if you had a Budweiser with a chocolate churro soaking in it for a couple hours. Yeah.
That sounds tremendously fucking unappetizing.
It's odd. I'm gonna say it's odd. All right, what questions we got? I love questions.
Hold on. Before we get into that, settle down there, pregame. Let's at least introduce people that may not be familiar with Mr. Zach Krusey to his resume.
Eisner-nominated Professor Zach Krusey.
That's right.
I don't know if this information is still accurate or not, but I'm reading from the MSU website, so I don't know how it's
are you Wisconsin Green Bay now?
I'm at UWGB now.
Well, you're still a scholar of literature and visual media.
Yeah.
Including comics, film, and television. Author of Mysterious Travelers, Steve Ditko and the Search for a New Liberal Identity from the University of Mississippi Press. Your publications have appeared in Critique, Studies in Contemporary Fiction, the Journal of Comics Studies, Studies in Comics, and Source Notes on History of Art, among other places.
Yeah.
And an old friend of Around Comics as well.
Well, I mean, and that's the weird thing, because we look at Zach as just one of our buddies, right? Because we've known each other for, I'm rapidly coming up on like 20 years.
Yeah.
Because we're old. For listeners out there, I think what Brian so eloquently was able to stop the show and point out is that besides being one of our really good friends, Zach is one of the preeminent comic book experts in the world.
Yeah.
Historian.
He is legitimately, you are a published comic book historian and expert. And that's we poke fun at you because you're shit and we love you. But it's really fucking impressive. I mean, you've done way more than Sal and I will ever do in a published regard to like the medium.
You know, I would be embarrassed if you did, I would be embarrassed if you didn't give me a hard time. What kind of friend would you be if you didn't give me if you didn't hassle me about some?
I got Zach to drink his very first Wisconsin Old Fashioned.
You did, yeah. I've had several since.
And you still moved to Wisconsin. That's impressive.
Oh man, I love it here so much.
It's awesome, isn't it?
It's amazing.
How do you like Sheboygan? How do you like? I mean, seriously, let's get off topic a little bit. How do you like Sheboygan?
I love it.
Right?
It's an amazing little town. It's just a goofy little arts town. They're like within 10 minutes of my house, like a 10-minute walk, I can hit Lake Michigan, a comic book store, and about a half a dozen bars. And a really great Mexican bakery and cafe. And then same direction, there's a great taco place. Like, we're fine. Everything's coming up flowers.
You can write out the apocalypse in Sheboygan.
Absolutely.
Really, really well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's
plenty of fresh water.
So there's two comic book stores in town. One does new comics, and the other was just like a consignment back issue thing. They got like toys and stuff. But I went down to the other place today, the back issue place, and I pulled out, you know, like 5 Charlton Horror comics, $3 a pop. Okay, sold.
I'm happy. You're such a nerd.
I'm happy to pay you.
It's like you walk into every comic shop and you're like, can you show me to the Charlton section?
I mean, doesn't it? Am I alone in this regard?
Yes, you are. It's like you and Hillary Barda and like 4 other people.
That's fine. Don't tell anyone else. Leave it alone. Because we are underpaying for these issues. And I want to keep underpaying for these.
Oh, I just you just spiked the market on Charlton Comics now. Here at the AC bump, as we call it. You know, it's forget it. Now it's just gonna go through the roof.
I've ruined it. I've ruined it for myself and on all my compatriots.
Yeah. Sir, you settled in, unpacked, getting there?
More or less. I mean, all my comics are still in storage. Not all my, like, all my old stuff is still in storage. So we got to get those up here.
So I told Marta, it's like, yeah, you know, really good friend of mine has moved to Sheboygan. Gonna get him to come down to Milwaukee and we can hang out. And she looked at me, and this is Marta, what you love. She's like, fuck that. I want to go to Sheboygan.
Mm-hmm.
They need to invite us.
Yeah. Like,
okay. I can probably arrange that.
We have a spare bedroom. 3 sheets here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Down. We live like an hour and a half away from each other.
That was the goal of this entire podcast, wasn't it? Just to get you invited to Zach's house.
Yes.
Is that
I want to go to a cookout.
To Sheboygan.
Mm-hmm. You know, they are home of the Sheboygan Brat.
Yeah. Chris is looking for what Chris is really looking for is a Sheboygan side by side. You kids at home can look up what that is.
That sounds
I don't know what that is. I'm a little afraid.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Sounds did a little weird. Did you just sounds a little freaky, Zach. I don't know.
From a PG rating, are we PG-17 now?
No, Sheboygan side by side is two Sheboygan official brats side by side in a single bun.
So sounds it's like a double party. It's Chris. A double brat. It's nothing like the Chicago combo, which is still when I remember our buddy Mario Muscar came to Chicago for some sort of show or whatnot. And we went to Al's Italian Beef on 18th, and he ordered a combo thinking it was an Italian beef and a side of fries. And no, that is not a combo. A combo is an Italian sausage topped with an Italian beef in a bun with fries.
That's a lot.
You know, that is one of the things that we have in common with Zach that I think would be an interesting discussion tonight is that he is one of the only other people that I know that went through the similar hell that we did of running a comic book convention.
Oh man, yeah, we all did that.
You were Big Apple Con, right?
Apple City.
Or Apple City Con.
Apple City.
Big Apple, Big Apple, Apples, yeah. Apple City.
Big Apple's Apple a different city. That's a different city.
Yeah. So Apple City Con.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, I mean, you guys are largely to blame for that. So
our idiocy of running the Windy City Comic Con.
Oh yeah, I was inspired. I mean, that's not a joke, right? Like,
yeah, it was awesome, right?
Yeah, it was an amazing. Those both of those shows were both. They're incredible. They're an incredible time every time. And like, there was so much to do and so many people to see, and it was everything that I love about going to shows.
It was really this like center cut, perfect time in comics that we're like podcasting and like this whole new generation that was almost like clear cut, like this clear cut new generation of comic book creators, and podcasting was happening. And we were in Chicago, which is a really easy place to get in and out of. Honest to God, the hardest place was finding the venue. But, you know, at that was what, 2009, 2010 ish.
You guys were 9, 10.
No, 10.
Is that right? 9, 10? Because I was 10 to 15.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you spend all of your waking moments watching reality TV? Well, you're in good company. I'm Will.
And I'm Marissa. And we're the hosts of Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails, a new weekly podcast that covers the ever so entertaining and cringy world of reality television.
Each week, we'll be raising our glasses and diving into the latest drama and chaos from our favorite reality TV shows.
From 90 Day Fiancé to The Bachelor. We've got all your reality favorites covered.
So grab a drink and join us as we clink our glasses to the hilarious and delightful train wrecks of reality TV.
Subscribe now to Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails on your favorite podcast platform.
Oh, wow, you ran yours for so long. Yeah, it took us 2 years before we were like, yeah, that was fun. But yeah, I mean, it was this like great group of creators that like now today it's like, you know, you got the white whale, which, will be behind me.
I can see him already.
There's my Jaime Hernandez sketch that Zach got for me. You got Jaime Hernandez to come to your show. How did you do that?
I asked him.
I hate you.
Yeah. And now I see, I've seen him probably 5 or 6 times since, and we hang out and talk. And like, and he's like, hey, you still talk to the Fort Wayne people? I'm like, a couple. And no, we talk about that all the time. I just saw him at San Diego at the Eisners, and that was what we talked about for the first 15 minutes.
Oh, that's awesome.
With that. So, like what a bizarre world to live in. We're like, oh, this guy that I think is a god is now my, you know, casual friend.
Yeah.
We just talk about things. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I look back, was looking at the lineup from that show, and I mean, what, Jeff Lemire, mm-hmm. Tony Moore, Jeffrey Brown, and Jeff Darrow, and Azzarillo, and Jill Thompson, and it was crazy. You have Steranko?
I had Steranko, yeah. I had a lot of those same people that Jill never came, but I had all those other people you listed. No, I didn't have Tony either. I never landed Tony. But yeah, I had Jeffrey Brown the first year, and mm-hmm. I didn't have Jeff Lemire, but I had the first year I had Matt on a single panel was Matt Kent, Jeffrey Brown. Who else was on that? It was a bonkers panel. Just like a crazy just lineup of like indie, like dark, like people now, like you couldn't dream to get.
Yeah. But it was a neat time in comics, wasn't it? It was an
incredible time.
Right?
Like, and you couldn't replicate it now because everybody was so new and so fresh, and like we weren't all like jaded. Just like,
oh, we were plenty jaded, Zach.
Well, but not like, you know, like the horrors of social media had not really set in.
Yeah.
And like lines were not drawn in the sand about, you know, like it was a different time where everybody was much more open and willing to do this stuff. And also we weren't all fucking just bombarded with superhero and comic book media like every day, you know, unless we chose to be that way. Like, I mean, we were part of a we were part of like a very sort of small moment in time where we were doing that before that was the only thing you could do.
Yeah. Like the Bendis board.
Yeah.
Was still a big deal. What was Warren Ellis's forum? The Engine.
Yeah.
You know, those were like the big voices in comics. Mm-hmm. And it's like the, where did Fraction, Fraction kind of got his career going by what, Comic Book Resources? Was he a CBR guy?
I think that sounds right. Oh. But I mean, he was a message board guy, though. And
he was a message board guy. So was Gail Simone.
Yeah.
Is that the first Windy City Comic Con?
This is 2009. This is from a photo stream by Quimby's Bookstore.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
On Flickr. And yeah,
it was a neat little show, man. It was a neat little show.
This was the first one.
Oh God, I can't even. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's bananas.
So fun. So fun.
Mr. Brown.
There's Jeffrey. Yeah, it was like this amazing mix of indie and commercial. And I remember it was either the first or the second year. I got this very angry email from some comic book creators in Chicago, their web comic artist, and they were very angry that we were not doing anything for web comics. And I was just like, okay, well, we just hadn't thought about it. You want to do a panel? And they're like, yeah. So I actually have a photo stream that I did, Sal, and it's got pictures from the webcomics panel. And this is like 2009. It's like webcomics were kind of in their infancy at that point. So, and that was kind of our attitude, was it was going to be a juried show. So we weren't going to let just anybody come in and set up. But we were definitely, I mean, it was curated, but we were friendly to what was going on with newer artists.
Yeah, listen, we just had a bunch of friends that were in comics and we wanted to hang out with them. We didn't really
Throw a party, right? Yeah. We wanted to throw a party.
We made almost no money and it was way more work than it was worth, but it was a lot of fun and people still talk about it like it was something amazing. So, hey,
we made like 20 cents an hour.
Yeah.
You guys
and all the volunteers.
We made about 20 cents an hour, but it was split between us.
Lucky ducks.
Right? Well, the thing is, so you took that same kind of concept. You never charged anyone for a table, right?
No, I charged vendors, but I never charged an artist for a table.
So for all the kids out there that want to run the coolest comic book convention ever, our business model, which is the worst ever because it was a way to make no money, was that we took what it cost to run the show, to rent the space, to, you know, do basically all of our expenses. We lumped that together and then we figured out how many vendor spaces we had and we divided it by that, right? And so when we opened the doors for the show was paid for, and anything that came in after that would be income. But we never charged it because it was a juried show. We never charged any of the creators' table fees because we asked them to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we made it a totally creator. And this is what you did at Apple, at your AppleCon, was you made it a creator specific show where the creators were in the middle of the room and the vendors are on the outside.
Yeah.
And then we did the same thing.
Yeah. Because I know that you guys feel this way too, but I mean, that's why I was there. That's why I did it. It's because of a passion for the medium and the friends that we all had and were making at the time who were making these books that we all loved and gushed over for, you know, however long. I mean, that was the point, right? I mean, that's always the point to me. And I didn't like, I don't know if you guys encountered it but I would get like emails and I would have to like very gently let some people down who asked me, who asked to come to the show. I'm like, no, like I won't say his name, but there was a professional.
Dave Wachter.
Yeah, it was Dave. Every year, I'm like, sorry, Dave, can't come.
Maybe some year, Dave, you'll.
Yeah.
Yeah, enough, but
like I get
it was at both Windy Cities, by the way.
Yeah, no, it was at every all of my shows too.
Yeah.
There's a couple of professional wrestlers and some Power Rangers.
Oh yeah, we had wrestlers.
Yeah, and I'm like
Power Rangers.
Like, yeah. And like, hey, and the wrestlers, like I really thought about it for a second with the wrestlers because I love wrestling. And I'm like, oh man, there is a very specific moment from my childhood that you were a big part of, but I don't think that I can invite you to this show because that is not what this is.
Is the juice worth the squeeze moment that you run into. And Sal and I guess we can talk about this now. It doesn't matter. It was a juice versus squeeze moment where it's like, yeah, we can spend $2,500 to fly this person in and put them in a hotel and, you know, and set them at a table. Is it going to make the show more than $2,500? And that those are the questions that you as a small comic book show that you run into. It's like, okay, I can bring this person in for $100, and yeah, Tony Moore is going to make the show more than $100, right? Chris Claremont contacted us about coming, and it was, you know, fly him in, put him up, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, okay, this is going to cost us like, you know, $2,500 to $3,000. Is Chris Claremont going to bring $3,000 of return in the show? And I think we ultimately decided, no, probably not.
Yeah. Is he going to put 300 more people through the door?
Right. And we were at that point, it's like, yeah, we're actually worried about having too many people. So yeah. That was a weird moment of saying no. We don't have space for you, Chris Claremont.
Right. Well, I had to have that same conversation with myself about Steranko. Mm. Right. And I mean, for Jim, it was ultimately the right choice because for a small city like Fort Wayne, like
right.
Jim will put asses in seats, and also was like really into doing the media, like local media stuff, because that's who he is.
He enjoys holding court.
Very much. So, you know, for Jim, like that I had to do that same calculation. And ultimately I was like, okay, yes, Jim's going to bring, I'm going to at least break even on this. Fine. And then even breaking even, he's going to put enough extra people in the alleyways to be spending money with Sean Pryor and Dave and Mike and whoever else.
Sure.
You know, where it's fine. Yeah. Fine, do it.
I thought for a time that you were going to pull off the impossible. If there was anyone that was ever gonna do it, and I think you were probably closer than anyone has ever gotten. And as a published author on Ditko, I thought you were really close to getting Ditko to come to a comic book convention, which would have been worldwide news.
Yeah,
in that community.
I got a response.
That's as close as anyone's ever gotten.
Yeah, it was a rather detailed response. It was obviously no, but it was like I put together everything, like this complete package. Like, here are all the things I'm going to assure you. Here are limitations I'm willing to put into place, like restrictions I'm willing to put on, you know, folks for, you know, X, Y, and Z, and to protect your time and your sense of self and all. And it was a very polite and thoughtful no. But I felt I was as close as anyone was going to get.
Yeah.
Because I knew everything to say.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Like, ultimately, this just comes down to, you're in your 80s. Do you want to do this?
Yeah. Well, you have met him in person.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Oh, I was a maniac who beat on his door.
Yeah.
Crazy. But he treated me kindly, right? Because I didn't ram a camera in his face and ask him why he stole his ideas from Ben Cooper costumes.
When did you first become obsessed with Steve Ditko?
Oh, when I was a kid, when I was about fourth grade.
Do you remember
what it was? Yeah, it was those those Marvel, not Masterworks, what the hell do they call them? They had the same silver border as the Masterworks, but they were just single issues. Marvel Masterpieces, not Masterpieces. You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
They were reissued. They were reprints of like
I think it was Masterpieces.
Was it Masterpieces? That's somebody in the questions will know. But those are the cards. Yeah, Masterpieces were the cards. It was something like that, though. But they were loss leaders. They were essentially loss leaders to sell the Masterworks, right? So the first time I saw him, and I knew that I had seen him, was in that, in reprints of Spider-Man number one. But then after that, then after I saw his name there, then I made the connection, like, oh, this is the same guy that drew these Speedball comics that I've been reading.
Oh, and, Jesus.
And then it sort of snowballed from there. Mm-hmm. But he was the first person, I've said this before, but he was the first person, he was the first artist that I knew who they were. Right? I mean, I had like a good sense, because I was like 10, you know? But I had a good sense, like, I understood that, like, yes, Spider-Man, the Spider-Man that I'm reading, this is Eric Larson, Todd McFarlane, Spider-Man, this is a very specific look, but I don't really know anything about this beyond the fact that this is what Spider-Man looks like, right? But Ditko, like, I knew, like, this was a very distinct take or version of the character that was different from anything else that I was reading. Mm. And it, for starters, because of all the people were, you know, I wouldn't say ugly, but they were not... They did not have the toothpaste smile.
They weren't pretty.
Right. Yeah. It's not Romita's toothpaste smile, right? Like plastered over these characters. And it certainly wasn't, you know, the buxom babes of, you know, the 90s, you know, McFarlane, Liefeld, Larson, you know, era. So, you know, everybody just looked different and weird and strange and alien. And the character moved in unusual ways. Like even compared to like McFarlane, the character moved in unusual ways. And there was just something really captivating about it. And I became, you know, hooked on him from that point. It wasn't until like I had like some imagined sense of disposable income that I really dug into like all this, not strange. Well, some of it's strange, like the stuff that no average wizard reader would have access to. Right. Like I didn't get into that until I was like 19, 20 and like had, you know, summer 18, 19, 20 and had like summer jobs and stuff. But I knew all the Marvel things that he had done, like, you know, Spidey and Doctor Strange and you know, Speedball and, you know, even the Squirrel Girl stuff. Like I knew all those things really early, but it wasn't until much later that I read Blue Beetle. I was like late high school. Maybe freshman in college, first time I read Blue Beetle, at least his Blue Beetle. I knew Ted Kord. But so really since I was 10 and been, you know, just kind of thinking about it ever since. It was just like a, like, you know how like you pick up books and like they just click with you, mm-hmm. like it, or characters or artists click with you. I mean, it was a similar experience with Love and Rockets. Like the first time I read, you know, Love and Rockets and like really got to, and like really got to see, you know, Maggie and Hopi together. Like it was just immediate. Like, I understand these people. Like I understand this world. I understand these voices. I understand this conversation because of the music and the art and the way that it's all sort of being
the humor.
It's just being propelled towards me in this way that this is a language I understand.
These are my people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These are my people. The same, I mean, and I'm not saying this to be like, you know, mushier because I'm here, but like the same thing that like I feel like when we all became friends and we've met the people that are in our sort of shared circles and communities, like you look at them, you're like, nope, these fucking guys get it. Like, I'm safe here, we can talk.
These are my people.
Yeah. References are going to land, mm-hmm. right? And you know,
I go to Pittsburgh, I own this shirt.
Right.
Because I went to Pittsburgh to see Mario, right?
Yeah.
Who's one of our shared friends because he's one of our people.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. You just know your people.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt with those early Ditko Spider-Mans. Like I knew my people.
That's weird.
And it was a young age. But also, you know, I grew up in a town of fewer than 1,800 people. Like, who am I fucking talking to?
Why aren't you like this with like Paul Smith or Romita Jr.?
Well, with Romita Jr., I actually like
Jim Lee.
Well, you know, because everybody was reading that and it didn't. And I think sometimes, and maybe you guys feel differently about this, I don't know, but I think sometimes too, like part of the appeal to some of these things is that if something makes you feel special, or if you feel like you have a special connection to it, it makes you feel more special if other people don't know what it is. Right. If other people like don't automatically know this, like if you're a fourth grader and you drop a Steve Ditko reference to your friends and like, they're like, okay, but so do you want to trade me for this Ryan Sandberg card or not? Right. Like,
no,
you know, like there is something about that makes you feel unique and special in a conversation. Right. I mean, I would be lying if I said that wasn't part of it as a kid too. Like, this arcane bit of knowledge that belongs only to me and not any of you fellow toddlers, right? Like, you know,
just led you to a career teaching and wanting to have that special knowledge, that special powers, those special powers that the average person does not have.
The vast financial resources available to the average American professor. Yeah.
Yes, that too.
So
you're like that, man.
Absolutely.
I do have to ask, are people in Wisconsin smarter than people in Georgia? Just asking.
What do you mean by smarter, Chris?
Able to read?
They're better with cows.
I would say this. I would say that the things that restrict folks in Georgia do not restrict them as much here.
Okay. That's good. That's awesome.
Yes. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're much happier teaching.
Yeah. Happier teaching, happier sending my kids to school. Like, look, I'm not like one of these, you know, terrible people who's like, the South. Oh, it's just all, it is not.
No, there's wonderful things in the South.
Right. Yeah. That's not it. There's something else going on here. Something much larger. But like, I don't have to worry now about my kids coming home with homework, telling them how bad that mean old General Sherman was as he marched to Atlanta and liberated plantations.
Yeah. March to the sea.
Yeah.
Good. We're glad to have you here in the North, in the behind the cheddar curtain now.
Oh, it's great.
You know, and I'm just sitting here going, Wisconsin's just kind of south, just north. It's south north.
It's outside of there is a lot of Arkansas in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I've been to both.
It's not that different. It's colder, yeah. But that's.
I got a hard disagree with you on that one, man. It is like you got to live there for a year, then you come home, and you're
a whole year.
Yeah, you got to live there a whole year. And then you come home and your eyes are as big as dinner plates to just everything. And they ask you, how was your life? And you go, oh, I don't know.
I don't know how to answer that question. Sal, I saw your artwork for this episode. Have we all read this? This being Fantastic Four Full Circle, which is the Alex Ross Fantastic Four story that is kind of... you know, dancing between the raindrops of the Kirby and Lee version, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would lie if I said I read it. I looked through it.
It's really pretty, though, right?
It's pretty.
Yes, it's very psychedelic.
Yeah, it's, you'll read it. I mean, it's not a story that's going to change your life or anything like that. It's a Kirby Lee 1960s Fantastic Four story. It's updated a little bit, but man, Alex Ross, in a non Alex Ross way, really crushed this book.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that it's not painted is what put me over on it.
I want to see more of this.
Yeah. If he had painted this, I don't know that I would feel the same way about it.
It would have been beautiful.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing. But he really plays with that 1960s psychedelia with the color palette, and just, it's so kinetic, and it's just absolutely his tribute to Kirby. It is so pretty. Yeah. This will be a book that when I want to go back and just read an awesome FF story in part of an afternoon on a rainy Saturday, I will grab this and just go revisit it. It's that good.
Yeah.
You guys sound like it's a bad thing that Alex Ross is an amazing painter.
No, it's exciting and fun to see him do something that
I know, but there's always this painter. There's always this weird thing with Alex Ross of like people love his covers, but they don't really like his interior work.
Mm.
Because
I love his interior
painted.
We don't get enough of it. And if he can do more by doing this instead of painting, I'm all in, because this was amazing. You know what I mean?
As opposed to,
I think he's a great painter, but I just think when I see that painted stuff, it makes it feel stiff to me.
Yeah.
I mean, which is not to say that it's not beautiful. Which is not to say that he's not brilliant in every step of the way. I think that he is. But like, I look at that and I'm like, I get it. This is gorgeous. And the layouts are great. Mm-hmm. This feels...
It's the other side of Ditko, where like everyone is like weird and odd. Like Ross, everyone is like statuesque, right? Like sculpted almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels posed more than fluid.
Well, famously uses a lot of models.
Sure.
I don't necessarily mean that as a critique
or to say that that's bad or good. It's just not what I'm looking for. I want something that is moving, you know, in some way. Like something that's twisting my eyes around a little bit.
And that's why I think this Alex Ross kind of splits that category, where it was Alex Ross, but it felt more kinetic.
Yeah, I agree.
It was Alex Ross with the little Kirby thrown in it to make it feel a little bit more alive.
Yeah, no, I think this feels way. I think alive is the right way to say it. That's how I would say it.
Yeah,
it feels way more alive.
Yeah, it was fun. It's a really fun book.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's got a Nihilus.
Yeah. And it's gorgeous.
Gorgeous. It's gorgeous. I will have to read it. I haven't, like I said, I just got it in.
Read it.
I haven't
had a chance. Read it.
I will eventually.
Read it. God damn, Sal.
You spent $40 on it. You better read it.
I will. That's I will event, at some point.
What do you? Well, you got the. Let me see the slipcase version that Brucey was throwing out there. Is the slipcase worth it?
I mean, what is the non-slipcase version cost?
I paid like $19 on Amazon
for. Okay, so I picked this up at the LCS around the corner, so I paid full retail. So. And in,
cool.
It's a small store. There's not that many people in Sheboygan buying.
Oh, now you're all like Mr. Community. Now Mr. Wisconsin Community.
Yeah, because I was so anti-community before. That was my number one. I was famous for it. People would write me letters every day, like, why do you hate community so much, Zach? And I'm like, well, now I'm atoning for my sins, right? But anyway, no, it was just the version that he had, and so I picked up the slipcase. Oh, it's just an extra piece of cardboard that goes around the book. Cost me another $20, I guess.
Right. Yeah. It's okay. You're a high paid college professor
now. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. No, I mean, after this semester, I'm changing my name to Rich Millions.
Yeah, I can't wait to come up to the estate in Sheboygan. Yeah. Huge later estate. This year.
You wouldn't believe it.
So, yeah, Zach, can I tell a funny story from back before you?
Oh were no! Oh no!
Professor.
Yeah. Oh no!
Okay, so
I'm, not a, I'm not a person filled with shame, so it's okay.
No, this is. There's nothing to be ashamed of. This, if anything, it's more my shame. So I don't know if you'll remember this or not. So this was Chris had hosted a dinner. It was, I think, it was C2E2 or one of the conventions. I don't remember. I think it was the first year of C2E2, and Chris hosted a dinner party.
I have vivid recollections of this dinner. So
okay. So
does this end with someone puking on the
No. Okay. I don't know. Well, I'm sure there was. But we're downtown, we're at Chris's, it was actually at your parents' house.
It was my parents' house, yeah.
Yeah, they were away.
Their townhouse.
And you cooked and Mario was there. Everybody we knew was like, it was huge comic book nerd, awesome.
Wood and Price and
Amazing.
Yeah. Will Pfeiffer was there.
And I didn't really know Zach at that point other than through the internet, you know, podcasting, that kind of stuff. And we were drinking and talking and, you know, I was drinking and drinking and drinking. And and at one point we were on the rooftop and we were talking about, I don't know how many months later, I get a message from you. And it's like, hey, do you think I could give you a call? And I'm like, sure, absolutely. Yeah, give me a call. So Zach calls me and I, you know, this is really maybe the, I don't know, we haven't really spoken that much. We didn't know each other all that well. But I'm like, yeah, sure. Give me a call, you know? So he calls me and he's like, hey man, I just really wanted to say, you know, thanks. Like at Chris's, at that party, you know, we kind of had a heart to heart and I, you know, and you were sort of explaining how, you know, you were at a point in your life where you weren't sure what you wanted to do, whatever. And evidently I had given you some life advice and
you went on to quit your job and
you ended up becoming a professor and like what led you. And I'm sitting there listening to you tell me this. And I'm like, I have no recollection of this conversation. I have no idea.
That was completely fucking blackout drunk.
What the fuck time. I told you. No idea what I said, but I was really glad that it worked out because I would have felt fucking terrible if my drunken advice would have led you, you know, to complete ruin and desolation would have been bad.
Oh, don't worry. Which could have easily happened, and I certainly would have called you back and let you know, like, you really fucked up on this one, Sal. No, but that year, like, I know exactly, it was around Christmas time. It was around New Year's or Christmas time when I called you. But yeah, no, well, that was the year that I left DCBS that year, and I was going back to academia and everything. Like, I was taking some major risks. So yeah, and not to take the piss out of it too much, but I had talked to a handful of people who had made major differences for me that year. And there's like maybe four or five folks that I talked to, you among them, that like for whatever reason
didn't call me.
Nah, that doesn't sound right at all. That doesn't sound right. You know what sounds more right is I sent you a text. I'm like, hey, give me a call, and you're like, yeah, and then I never fucking heard from you. Sal just had the goodness in his heart to call me or to accept the call. No, but there's like four or five people, you two among them, that, you know, made major differences for just the way that I thought about things. And maybe not just from that drunken conversation, but just like by example in a variety of ways, but through something either with AC or some other thing. Well, at the time you were doing like your Fanboy Scout stuff, right? And just doing things that are like these things make sense and people are just doing shit because they think they should do it. What am I waiting for? So yeah. I mean,
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No. You're not putting me on the spot at all. They don't pay me to be nice. So, but that was totally true. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure part of it was our drunken conversation. I'm sure that played a major factor, but it was more than that, though.
Yeah,
good.
So, in all fairness,
that was right before Christina just painted that entire penthouse red. It was like the red wedding up there.
Let's not go down that.
Which, by the way, I had to talk to Marta. If you're going to watch Game of Thrones or any Game of Thrones TV show, if there's a wedding, just and you're averse to bloodshed, just turn the TV off.
Is she not?
Did you all watch House of Dragon this week?
Mm-mm. I'm not watching it at all, though.
Yes.
I was so upset with the last two seasons of the regular show. I'm like, I'm just out.
Yeah.
You're probably better off.
Zach, just listen to ACTV because I know you do because you're a patron of the show. What you can do by going to patreon.com/aroundcomics.
Way to get a plug in.
I got to throw my plug in. And you can listen to me and Sal and sometimes other people talk about TV and movies and video games and that, kind of stuff.
All right, enough of that. Let's get to some questions for our Steve.
All right. We
have lots of questions here.
Okay.
Let's see.
They're all for Zach.
Are they? Michigan State University has a comics forum, so that means they give scholarships to future students? Is that
true? Yes and no. So the comics forum is – so I was the academic coordinator for the forum for the past – for since I went there in 2015. So I put Appleseed on hiatus, right? And then immediately took over at the Comics Forum, which is just a convention, but for academics. So that's what the forum is. But they do have a scholarship, but that is specifically for students in the comics minor there. And most of those students are art students. So basically what they do for the...
No love for writers.
No, not none for... I mean, don't talk to me about that. but anyway, so that scholarship is for students in the comics minor program for comics making. But the forum itself is a little bit different. That's actually a hybrid conference that is a micro artist alley that with academic panels throughout the weekend. And we had really good people there. Like we had Sergio, we had Stan Sakai, who else recently? Just
like Sal, you're big time whenever you just say the first names. We had Sergio,
Stan.
Sergio. Yeah. Oh, we had Seth. So that one's not big time because he's only Seth. So.
Next question: with being part of a university, does Marvel, DC, or DC Warner Brothers give you free access to its comics library digitally for study?
Absolutely not. No.
No chance.
No chance of that.
They don't care.
No, and in fact, though, it's serious business, though, because you like the copyright stuff is really serious.
Yeah, I bet.
And like they try to go after academic publishers for like reprinting pages and stuff, which they can't do, but they do it anyway. So take that for what it's worth.
How were you with the book of any of the copyrighted Ditko material?
Well, most of it, a lot of the stuff that I use is in public domain.
Okay.
But that cover image, almost all the Charlton stuff he does in public domain because Charlton, for reasons known only to themselves, did not print copyright information in their indicia until like the late 70s.
Really?
So they never copyrighted anything because was copyright law. Like you had to print that in order for it to be copyrighted. Well, they didn't do that. So all of the Charlton stuff up to like 70 something until the law changed is public domain.
That's an amazing story in itself.
Yes. Yes. So
I have no idea. That's amazing.
That's what
we have Watchmen.
Right. Well, that, but.
Right. Yeah, sure.
But, well, DC still bought those characters. Yeah. But if you wanted to reprint something from, say, like those Captain Atoms, then you could totally reprint those.
Don't
give me any ideas.
Yeah, so like those Fantagraphics Ditko collections that they put out that Blake Bell edited. That's all public domain.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense.
So, but the other stuff that's not public domain, we just did it. Like the University Press just did it because it's for academic purposes. And it doesn't violate copyright at all. And we have to be allowed to do this in order to have the course. So, and then the University Press just says it. But there have been instances where other academic publications have tried to do this and then made the mistake of telling DC or Marvel what they're doing. And then DC and Marvel are like, oh, you can't do that. Well, that's not true. Right.
Yeah.
Like some famous, there's some famous examples of it, like where somebody wanted to publish an article about sexuality and queer identity in Batman and Robin comics. And then DC tried to prevent them from using images from their books.
Oh, shit. I know we've moved into the big time because we've got a John Suntress comment.
Uh-oh.
What?
Yeah.
John says, still waiting for the Charlton documentary that's still being made.
Yeah. I thought they did a Kickstarter for that or something. Is that right, John? Was there a Kickstarter for that? I remember that. That's been like years. Years and years that they've been talking about that. But there is a new book about Charlton that Tomorrow's is coming out. John B. Cook is doing a quick, like, quick and dirty, like, lay history of Charlton.
Which he is just good. Said, shut up. That was his only way to be a part of the conversation, John.
Wow, same John. Old John. Yeah, you know, that's the thing I miss from the old show that we have now is that John's not going to walk into one of the rooms and sit down and
take
and
over a microphone and completely take over the conversation. No.
Well, when I
here comes John now in my basement.
There's John now. When I was a boy. Love you, John.
We love you, John. Are universities that have comic book programs connected in any way? Here in Seattle, we have UW facility. In another city that 30 minutes away that has an office cover with comics. I can see from the bookstore. Nick, I'm not sure what that question is. I don't know if that's a question or a statement. Are you looking for directions? I'm not sure.
Well, there are a few major comic scholars at UW. I know that. Like Jose Alanis is there. And a few other people.
Speaking of college and comics. Zach, you've been to the University of Ohio. Has the comics? I've been there. Is a comics museum or their comics wing?
It's LeBron James Comics Museum.
Yeah, that's what it is. sorry, I touched my head and then I looked at myself in the screen. And, like things just got completely out of control.
You need to get that toupee under.
I do. My piece is all out of joint here. Anyway, so no, at Ohio State, so Michigan State University has the largest public collection of comic books in the world. That's comic
book. Oh, Michigan State does?
Yeah. So the MSU library has the largest collection of comics in the world.
Really?
Yeah. Not even close. That's why I went there. I'll tell you about Randy Scott in a minute. Or maybe we can talk about Randy later. He's interesting. He was in The Weathermen. Ohio State has the largest collection of comic and cartoon art in publicly available.
I wanted to talk to you about that because it was neat.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's not.
It's neat. Not?
It's neat.
It's neat. It's not.
Let me put it this way. I saw more interesting original art at C2E2 than I did at the art museum in Columbus.
In that installation.
So I think that there's still, and this is my argument, is that I think there's much more important art and certainly larger collections of important comic art in the private domain than there is in Columbus, Ohio.
That way.
There were some secondary Frank Miller pages from some Daredevil runs that were neat.
Sure. So
it was cool. I enjoyed it. I was not blown away.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. And I no sarcasm in that fine at all.
Yeah.
There's more in that collection than what's out on display.
Why?
Why is there more?
Why would you keep the good shit tucked away?
Because it's an archive and they don't even know. They actually haven't even cataloged it all yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
I mean, it was neat. It was cool. I loved it. It was amazing being in a comic art museum, right? And I was just like, okay, I want to see like this and this and this and this. And it like wasn't there.
Sure.
I mean, it was some cool stuff. But yeah, it's
some of those things. I mean, obviously, you're right. I mean, a lot of those things, many of those things, are squirreled away in private collections.
Yeah,
and
I see you talk about that online a lot. Mm-hmm. Whenever there's stuff that comes up in like heritage auctions, mm-hmm. and you're right with me. It's like, oh, great, another piece of amazing historic art that's going to be, you know, taken away and put into a private collection for people to never see. Instead of being in a
meanwhile, as you're sitting in front of a wall of fucking original art. Yeah. You can't have it both ways, asshole.
I agree.
Well, but some of that though is like, you know, universities have limited resources. You know, they can't afford to buy that stuff. Like, I'm sure that Caitlin McGurk and Jenny Robb at Ohio State are Karen Green at Columbia would have killed to have, say, the Master Race sequence that, you know, the Bernie Krigstein stuff, but they can't afford that, you know. Yep. They can't afford that at all. So,
well, and I think your point too was, you know, that it's a huge collection and they only have certain exhibits. So whatever exhibit he happened to see when he was there doesn't,
right.
It's not the entirety of it. Like right now they have a Charles Schulz Peanuts exhibit going on. And there's a, it looks like there might be a couple of other retrospectives. There's a Racism in America retrospective in cartoons that has you know, all sorts of different artists involved in it, and so yeah, I mean, it is. I'm interested. You mentioned something about someone being in the Weathermen. What was that? Who and what was
Randy,
that?
Okay, Randy Scott, who was the librarian. So the two people that really started comic studies as we understand it today were, I mean, there were people who sort of gathered pop culture ephemera and dropped it off in libraries. So like there's this guy, there's a guy at MSU that had a big collection of comics as a part of his pop culture studies in the beginning of Popular Culture Association. He had all these comics and he just dropped them off at the MSU library. So they had this tremendous collection. And then this guy came in who was not, he was working across the street at a store called Curious Bookshop, which is an early direct market retailer. It's still there. It's a used bookstore. And his name's Randy Scott. And he came over and said, yeah, well, I'd like to start working in the library. So they hired him in the library and he found a way to sort of just go rogue and start collecting comics and cataloging comics. So he was just buying up everything that he could get. And he literally wrote the book on how to catalog comics. So like the Library of Congress system is based on Randy's system. So before Randy was at Michigan State, he was kicking around Michigan and Ann Arbor with guys like Bill Ayers and ended up in the Weathermen and was at the Days of Rage in Chicago.
Wow.
And then was convicted there. He tells stories in pieces, right? For, I think if you know anything about the Weathermen, there's a reason why Randy's tells stories in pieces. but he was convicted in multiple states of multiple things in connection with his activities with the Weathermen. And sometimes, and a couple, at least once, he was convicted because he missed a court date, but the reason he missed a court date is because he was in jail for his participation in the Rage.
Wow.
So anyway, so that guy ends up at Michigan State and helped found comic studies. But yeah, like he,
because
he,
of course,
but he was involved with the Weathermen for a very long time. And if you ask him, he says like, well, I just handed out pamphlets. Okay. So, but he's just one of the most interesting people I've ever met. Just totally fascinating character, like encyclopedic, like knowledge and memory of like everything he's bought and when he's bought it and who he's met. And the stuff that he collects there, that's what a lot of like archival presses and publishers use to reprint stuff. So like Fantagraphics and the American Library of Comics stuff. Is that the imprint that works with Fana? Can't remember. Whoever's doing like the strips, right? Like the Rip Kirby and the Milt Kniff stuff. I mean, they work with Ohio State and with Randy because they have all the strips. Because some maniac before Randy was there, some maniac was collecting these strips and then pasting them onto cardstock and then hand making books and like stitching and everything and holding and putting things together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, those are the first comic books,
right?
Were collections of strips, right?
Right. But I mean, this person's like doing it every day, like
by hand. Yeah. But the thing, what no one ever says is that those strips were put on human skin.
Right. That's the big thing. Yeah. That's why they lasted for so long in the archive without being in Mylar. So Randy's a part of that, one of the people that started it. And then Lucy Caswell, who was at OSU, she was the other person that founded it. And those two basically got together and divvied it up. And Lucy said, okay, we have the art because we have all of this stuff. We've got all these brushes and, you know, we've got this whole collection from Kniff and things like that. And so it was determined, okay, Lucy has the art at Ohio State and Randy has the books at MSU. And then they would trade as they gathered things, they would trade them. So a lot of the stuff, though, in the early days was not pages because the original art market was what it was, but they had strip art. So a lot of the stuff at OSU is like E.C. Seeger and Walt Kelly. And like, so like those early Walt Kelly strips, like the We Have Met the Enemy and He Is Us, like that's at Ohio State. Like, so those things are there. They're just in a shelf somewhere until they bring them out for...
Have you ever gone down to is it Charleston, Illinois, the E.C. Seeger's hometown? It's basically across the river from St. Louis, and there's a Popeye statue as you go into town, and there's a nice little Popeye museum there.
The days when cartoonists were lauded as heroes.
You know, but yes and no, because there were some cartoonists that were lauded as heroes, but the majority of comic book artists were kind of relegated to comic art as a lower brow. You know, for a lot of them, they were the folks that couldn't cut it in New York advertising, and they went into comic book art. But then you had people, I think Wally Wood probably changes that for a lot of people, where he was maybe one of the first people that could have cut it in New York advertising, but he wanted to make comics, right?
Sure. The comic strip artists were treated differently too, though.
Weird delineations, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're not, I mean, style, I mean, there's differences, there's formal differences.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing the same thing. I mean, and there's lots of movement back and forth. But
Robert Ripley.
Yeah.
Ripley, first millionaire cartoonist in America, I believe.
Right.
Who?
Robert Ripley. Ripley's, okay. Believe It or Not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, incredibly famous strip artist and cartoonist, and, you know, kind of created the factory of, you know, after his, you know, after he became incredibly famous, sort of like other people doing the strips under his name, that sort of thing. But he was insanely famous as a as a comic strip artist and yet never really mentioned in much of you know comic lore at all.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, so before you blipped out there, Chris, that's a lot of the stuff that you're not seeing. There's Hal Foster, there's Alex Raymond, there's Kniff.
Oh, yeah. There's,
you know, like all that stuff, like it comes out like in patches, but it's there, like crazy stuff. They've got the Neil Adams page for, they've got the Green Lantern Green Arrow page. What have you done for, you've done things for the purple skins, the orange skins.
Oh, yeah.
What have you done
for Green Arrow?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I saw that when I was there. I mean, it was cool. It was good. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I went.
Listen, all I'm saying is that just apologize now to the entire state of Ohio. Or
it's really cool. It's neat. But, you know, it's to go back to it before I clipped out, it's whenever I see you comment about like original art auctions, you usually say, "Oh, great, something to be, you know, put away in a private collection that no one is ever going to see instead of going into a museum where it should be." And yes, as I sit here in my office surrounded by probably 50 or so pieces of original art, I will say, yeah, that stuff needs to be available for everyone to see. So, or and you know what? When I die, it will be donated somewhere.
Sure. So, well, right? So
I'm going to give it to Sal. Sal gets all my comic books and my original art.
Yeah, Marta's going to love that.
Yeah. So now
she already said that's cool.
Now it's Sal's responsibility to donate.
It is. And now you have to find a museum for my, and I have like
eBay.com.
Hey, when Alien Legion becomes recognized for the great comic book that it was, I own several pages from the first six issues of Alien Legion.
Hey, speaking of that, so you know who I went to the Ditko convention that they had last year in Johnstown, and Carl Potts was there, and I talked to him a little
He's awesome.
Yeah. Just a great human being, first of all. But anyway, so I mentioned the Alien Legion stuff to him because I read that because of you guys.
Because it's amazing, right?
Oh, yeah, it's also amazing, but I probably would have just went past it and grabbed something else if I had not put it on AC. But anyway, like super fascinating guy, like as like an editor and writer and stuff at Marvel.
Oh yeah, big time.
And also, I said this to him, so I'm not talking out of school here, but like incredibly reserved when he can hear people, when people within earshot say things that are patently false or insane. about comics and like the things that he saw and did and knew about, you know, while he was working at Marvel and other places. Really, really professional person, let's say.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Like, because there was a person there who was just saying some
bullshit.
bat shit things. And Carl and me and a couple others are sitting there going, "This is fascinating. This is the first I'm hearing about this. Carl, you were there. Have you heard about this?" "No, I've never heard of this." "Oh, okay. Well, moving on."
That's amazing.
Yeah. Awesome.
What do you say about Alien Legion?
Typical stuff. You know, like, you know how it is. Like when we encounter people and like, "Oh man, this book is so great. And I loved it." And they go, "Oh, thanks. Well, I really appreciate that." And that's basically it.
Yeah.
Then we moved on. "Well, can I get you a beer?" And he said, "Oh, okay."
Oh, then they got it. Okay. All right, there's guys.
The oddness of, you know, the reality sometimes where the importance we put on the work compared to the people that did it is sometimes not as equal. You know, it's just sort of like, hey, it was a job. You know, at some point it was my job. This is what I wasn't thinking necessarily at the time that it was, you know, groundbreaking.
You remember when we had Don Glute on the show?
I remember that Don Glute was on the show.
We had Don Glute on the show. And for folks out there that don't realize this, Don Glut, beyond being a writer, and he came into Chicago. He sat down with us at Dark Tower Comics. Don Glut wrote tons of Bronze Age comics, a lot of Marvel team-ups, and a lot of like secondary and tertiary Marvel comics. He also was a part of like the writer's room or creative team that basically created the He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Like Grayskull is called Grayskull because his ex-wife's last name was Gray. And so he called it Grayskull. So whatever. And so we had, it was Tim Seeley and Tim's brother, who are two of the biggest He-Man fans, Tim and Steve. They're two of the biggest He-Man and Masters of the Universe fans I've ever met in my entire life. And they were so fucking geeked up to meet Don Glut and talk about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. And Don was just like, yeah, it was just a job. And they were just like, yeah. They were so geeked up about it. And he was like, yeah, it was a job.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those guys are like that. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, when you're creating something, maybe you're not thinking in the sense of like what it is going to accomplish or necessarily what effect it's going to have on people. You're just telling a story or you're, you know, yeah, drawing a story or whatever it may be. And then it takes on a life of its own. And what it becomes to people is that's the art form. That's what, you know, I mean, like that, it isn't, you know, it's, I think it's probably more rare, especially in more of the, you know, commercialized stuff like comic books and TV and movies and things that are made specifically as commerce, you know, to then all of a sudden it becomes something that is really important to someone else's life. It's like, well, you know, I wasn't trying to do that. It wasn't, you know what I mean? Like that wasn't, you know, it was just like,
yeah. Cool. Hey, bills pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I mean, artists don't really know the effect of their work, right?
Right.
Like, they don't create the interpretation. They don't create the meaning. That meaning happens somewhere in between, you know, the consumer and the finished thing. So, you know, who could say? I don't know how people interpret anything I write or do or say,
yeah,
right? I don't get to decide that. And, like, when someone confronts you, like, and this is not the same. This is not the same at all. But I had a couple of people tell me, like, oh, wow, this X, Y, and Z that you wrote, that was really interesting, and it changed the way I thought. I'm like, oh, well, I just wrote it so that I could have a CV line. So thank you for reading it, right? Like, you know, I mean, it's not – it's different because it's not the same level of, you know, creation. It's not the same thing. But like, what do you say? Like, yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, you do something you love doing or you enjoy doing, yeah, and you have fun doing it, or you want it. I mean, I think a lot of times it's not even about money necessarily or paying the bill. Sometimes it is, but you know, and then it becomes something more than you ever intended it to be, or it's like you said, interpreted differently than anything you consciously, there was I think I talked about this before. It was like, which is interesting now that there's a new movie coming up. But happened to see a clip of Steven Spielberg was on the show Inside the Actor's Studio with, I can't remember the guy that ran the Actor's Studio. He's passed away now, but.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Lipton.
James Lipton. And Lipton is asking him about Close Encounters, and he brings up the fact that Spielberg's mother was a concert pianist,
yeah,
and his father was a mathematician, and in Close Encounters you had a scientist and a musician trying to speak to an alien, and you see this look on Steven Spielberg's face, like, and oh, he basically says, yeah, I've never realized that's what that story was about until you just asked me that question. And now there's a new Spielberg movie called The Fabelmans that comes out, which is essentially the story of him as a child not being able to really understand his parents, who in the movie is a musician and a mathematician, I believe. And it, you know, so it's like, it's interesting. You know, he had no idea. It was some, you know, years later, someone else brings the idea up.
James Lipton was his, you know, like psychiatrist for the day.
Well, it was just the, you know, it was just like James Lipton standing back from it is seeing something that Spielberg making it didn't intend. He wasn't trying. He didn't consciously know that that's what he was doing. He was telling a story about being a child and not relating to his parents. And how do I, you know, I want to be a filmmaker. They're, you know, one of them's a musician, one of them's a scientist, and I don't relate to either one of them as a child because I want to make movies and they don't understand that. And so he makes this movie about an alien and communicating to the alien as a musician and a scientist. But he doesn't understand that that's what he's saying. He's talking about himself and he's talking, you know what I mean? Like, it's so deeply rooted. And so it's like, yeah, how do you ever know that what can, and, you know, why does that movie have a connection with a bunch of people? Well, because it's about a kid who doesn't understand why he can't communicate with his parents. And we don't even understand that necessarily watching it, but we have a connection to it because of that universal sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a perfect example. Oh, I just deleted Chris. Oh, there he is.
WTF.
Sorry. I accidentally hit a button and you were gone. Want me to do it again? I'll do it again. There, you're gone again, Chris. It's just me and you now, Zach.
All right. Now, let's talk bad about Chris.
There he is.
Hi, Chris. What are you doing here?
I'm the one that invited you to be here
tonight. Oh, yes. Right.
Sal wanted Seeley.
I said no. I said, hey, do you want to get a guest? And Chris said, yeah, do you, who? And I said, I don't care, whoever you want.
He said, Tim Seeley. And I was like, you know what? How about Zach Krusey? He's like,
I did not say Tim Seeley.
He said, whatever.
I said, Zach would be great.
Listen.
I said, let me bone up on my Steve Ditko and we'll talk.
All right. Listen, just get him on here. He's going to bore us to death with all his Ditko shit that I don't care about. Then I don't have to say anything for 90 minutes, and it's going to be fine. So whatever.
Essentially, let him go, and I don't have to talk. And
so Krusey, after we finish up here in a minute, because we're running long, we got to get together because curling season starts in like 3 weeks.
Oh, I'm just going to leave
actually, now. I curl on Thursday of this. I won't be on AC this week because I'm curling in Madison.
Oh,
so you know what? You may be back with Sal and Tom next week.
Tom and I could talk about crazy Packer dads.
Oh God! Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I don't think that's
gonna happen. Sal's gonna hate it.
I don't think I'm gonna be here for that one. I think this might be the end of Around Comics.
Yeah, I'm curling in Madison next Thursday.
Oh, no episode.
We can live stream
curling.
Yeah, live stream curling. I start at 8:00. I've got to draw at 10 a.m.
Okay, and that's the end of curling with Chris. So Zach, it's been a pleasure as always, my friend.
No,
good
I love
to see you. And thanks for coming on last minute. You know, there was sort of a, you know, always good to talk. I'm glad things are going well for you again. So are you working on any other books? Are you working on anything new in the near future?
I just had an article come out on a movie from the 50s called The Werewolf, which is one of only three werewolf movies from the 50s. It's about nuclear holocaust and vaccines through the conduit of werewolves.
Ooh.
So, which is what the movie's about. So that's the article. That's on Horror Homeroom, which is available. Now he's back. And then I have another thing coming out about how much I hate sci-fi movies, not science fiction movies, but like movies produced by the Sci-Fi Channel post Shark.
Oh yeah, they're pretty terrible. Stanley's Harpies.
Okay. I can see.
I wrote a pretty scathing book chapter about Lavalantula. So those are the two most recent publications. But I'm working with the Ditko family right now on his effects, and working through like what they have and getting things cataloged, because there's a couple of auctions coming up that they're doing. So I'm working with them to organize those things and figure out what to do with them and what they are. So that's a project in and of itself. And then I'm working on another thing right now that is about...
Seems like that could be a documentary.
It should be.
Right? That's...
But, and then I'm doing another thing about race and the carnival. So.
Interesting.
Nice.
Race and the carnival.
Yeah.
White. Well, I want to be the first to invite you on. We're just in the process of starting a new podcast called Film Force 5.
Oh, I know.
And, we would love to have you on that sometime. So think of some themes, some subjects that you would be interested in talking about. And yeah, we'd love to have you on that as a reoccurring guest for sure.
I can do double duty because I'm teaching intro to film in the spring, so I can just start.
Look at that. This is what I love. Actual experts.
See?
Yeah, talking on podcasts instead of us idiots with no expertise.
Oh, I got another guest today. It's going to be awesome. Oh, Dave O'Malley. You're going to love Dave.
I don't know who that is.
Dave's amazing. You're going to love Dave.
Let me guess. He's a curler.
No, he's not. It's Tori's brother-in-law.
Oh, you already told me about that.
He's amazing. He's great. He's been watching the 100 movies that you should watch before you die for months.
Yeah. The A5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys watch those already? Amateur. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you'll love Dave. He's great. I'm sure. Zach, I say this seriously. You do more to preserve and cherish comics than 99.9% of comic fans do. And I want to thank you for that. And thank you for being a guest tonight. Appreciate it. We love you. And you're welcome back anytime.
I love you too. And we have a Brewers game to catch at some point here.
I'm going Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm expecting to see either and or division clincher and Pujols' 700th home run.
So are you going Wednesday?
Yes.
Can I invite myself Wednesday?
I'm in a box on Wednesday.
Well, I guess not.
I got invited.
Okay, fine. I'll allow it.
We'll figure it out. We got like one series after that.
Yep,
we'll talk afterwards.
There's time.
Because yes, I want to take you to your. I want to take you to your first. Is it your first Brewers game?
Yeah, I
want to take you to your first Brewers game,
Mr. Right. Brewer, Chris Niesman, Mr. Brewer.
Yes, oh, Joe. I have
Mr. Wisconsin
opening curling banquet tonight. All right. Everyone, we love you. We will be back. We've got some. Is it ACTV this week, or are we starting Film Force 5? No.
What? I don't know. I can't get any of you fuckers together to actually do a podcast.
I'm available every goddamn Sunday.
So, no, this Sunday, I am not available for anything. So there
will
be nothing.
We'll figure it out. Okay.
There will be nothing.
We're going to be. I won't be back here next Thursday. Zach will be over. Running the
show's
show.
Over. This is it. Sure. This is the last show.
Oh,
Zach, thank you
no,
for being
not.
The last
we'll be
guest
back.
Ever.
Zach will run it next Thursday. In the meantime.
In between. Yes, Chris has been drinking. You can tell. It's pretty obvious, Joe G, that Chris has been drinking. Yes.
Everywhere.
In and around comics.